Bear with me now. We're going to begin this morning with some numbers.
A 2010 family transportation survey in Nova Scotia showed the most common way students get to school is by vehicle, more than 40% in cars and more than 30% by bus.
Also,
fewer than 2 out of every 10 children in the province walk to school. In poor weather, that number drops.
Some schools are too far for feet, but many children ride in family vehicles, even in densely populated areas and safe walkable communities.
In Nova Scotia, more than half of students live within a kilometer and a half of their schools. 13% live less than 500 meters away. Meanwhile, 2/3 of parents say their neighborhoods are safe for walking to school and barrier-free.
Yet 30 years ago, the parents of these students were walking in decidedly greater numbers.
Only 8% reported being driven to school in the family car.
In one generation, the concept of the leisurely walk to class has nearly disappeared. So what, you might say?
Yeah, so what?
Well, the thing is, that walk to school may have a lot to do with something much harder to measure, a kid's happiness. I'm Pauline Dakin. Welcome to Maritime Magazine and Happy Thanksgiving. This morning, reporter Leslie Lowe takes us along on something called a walking school bus. Here's Leslie's documentary, Walk the Talk.
Morning.
Thank you.
Hey guys, it's Hessel.
Thanks. On a really fair weather day, we can have up to a dozen, and usually at least 2 guardians, sometimes more. Sometimes parents come just because it's nice to walk. On a low day, it can be as few as 2 of us.
Shelby Lendrum is a parent walker on the Central Halifax route. She walks the bus every day, rain or shine.
So does Audrey and Clara. Unfortunately, on cello days, if it's raining, Clara has to take a ride, but her sister still walks with us, given the choice. She still comes with us every time.
A walking school bus is just what it sounds like. A group of children and guardians who walk a specific route at a specific time on specific days. If you want to join the bus, just be at the stop and you're on.
So what's that tag for? Can you tell me?
It's for the walking school bus.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's a walking school bus.
It's a school bus with legs. Cool.
All right. Rock and roll.
All right.
Okay, so how many kids do we have now?
The concept of the walking school bus originated in the early 90s in Australia with traffic planner and author David Enwick. He was looking at ways of reducing traffic congestion around schools and at bolstering the independent travel of kids.
We wait at the corners, we look 2 blocks each way, we pick up strangers. You know, if we know they're coming this way, we're happy to do it. And there's no reason why the kids shouldn't be walking.
All right, guys. Ready to roll? What jacket are you wearing, Max?
Jason Morrison's son is on the walking school bus every single day.
I find parents of our age seem to have a heightened level of fear about things. I'm not sure where that comes from. I'm not sure it's based in any actual statistics of harm to children, but people our age seem to be incredibly anxious about a whole variety of things with related to their children, and that was surprising to me when I was talking to people. Why wouldn't more people want to do this? This is often the number one-sided thing. Something would happen to their child, or someone wouldn't be able to manage 6 children walking to school, and that never occurred to me, but I think I'm at a step in that regard, too, with some other parents. Purple one?
Until quite recently, pretty much all kids walked to school, in the city or in the country. And that went on for centuries, with no help from parents and very little organizing. It's just how it was. Today, kids are driven. Check the scene outside any school, any given morning. It's a traffic jam of rushing, hollering, kissing, book bag tossing parents behind the wheel. Driving gets kids to school a little bit faster. But car-bound children get less exercise, and their parents report feeling more rushed, according to that province of Nova Scotia survey. The vehicles they travel in contribute to greenhouse gas emissions and neighborhood traffic congestion. So if all this is true, then why do so many parents drive their kids to school?
Hey, the door!
The reasons are everywhere.
Sure. Okay.
Nikki Berrigan works at the Nova Scotia Community College. She drives her kids, 8-year-old Olivia and 13-year-old Jack, to school every morning before she heads off to work.
The kids go to two different schools, so I drop them off on my way to work. I take Jack, who is further away, and then I drop Olivia off because she's very close to where I work.
And how far is the distance from the house to the school?
It's not very far at all. I live and work very close to the school, but I have my reasons that I drive.
Nikki laughingly refused to say the exact distance, but I can tell you that both schools and her office are within a kilometer and a half of her Halifax house. But really, distance has very little to do with Nikki's choice.
I have a dog, so I go home every day at lunchtime, and both kids are very busy. They have activities after school. Today, for example, I get off work at 4 and have to be at the Canada Game Center for 5. So it's really hard, and life at home is very rushed. So, and I do go home at lunchtime to let the dog out and try to get things ready for dinner and stuff like that. And I am not a morning person. I'm not that organized.
Nikki's 8-year-old, Olivia, sometimes wants to walk. And Nikki has just started letting her.
With a group of friends that live on the same street, just starting in the last 2 weeks. So yeah, she would like to walk, but she doesn't want to walk every day. And Jack, he doesn't want to walk.
Why not, does he say?
He is a teenage boy, and he wants to get up like 5 minutes before we absolutely have to go out the door. Brush his teeth, out the door he goes. He's really hard. It's really hard.
Hi, I'm Jennifer.
Oh, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well.
How's it going?
Good. Jennifer Rogers lives outside Halifax in a subdivision. Her kids, a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old, go to a bused school. And the bus, conveniently, stops right at the top of Jennifer's driveway. But Jennifer has to be at work long before the bus pulls up. So every morning, they all pile into the car and she drops the kids at school before she makes her way to her downtown office. It is not a pleasant trip.
Rushed and frustrated. Get in the car and get your seatbelt on and all that. It takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot out of me for sure. Even like not in the mornings too, like when we're going places, like it's inopportune times. Like, can you take me to my friend's house? And that seems like a hassle. Yeah, I'm constantly rushed.
Jennifer's kids don't like the drive either. They both want to walk.
Yeah, because they just hate driving there every day, and they feel that if they could walk, then they wouldn't have to spend so much time at the school, and that they could take that time to walk to get there. But they can't because it's too far, and we have coyotes.
Like lots of you, and like me, Jennifer walked to school as a child. She lived just as far from her school as her kids do now, and there was no bus. Jennifer says her parents drove her literally nowhere. A generation later, she finds herself driving her own kids literally everywhere.
Yes, I do. My 8-year-old has a friend that lives in the subdivision, maybe a 10-minute walk, and I do drive him often, and he does ask to drive his bike and his scooter and walk down, and I always say, no, I'll drive you. So it's funny because I never really thought about it now until he asked me.
So why do you drive?
I don't know. Like, I guess I'm babying him. He's probably old enough to do it, but I'm nervous that, you know, is he going to get hit by a car? Or, you know, that kind of thing.
That anxiety Jennifer describes, and that Jason Morrison commented on earlier, is well documented among today's parents. And it's seeped into activities other than just walking to school.
I don't know. Like, I do think that we've probably babied our children maybe a little bit more, or maybe because it was that we didn't have that opportunity or privilege to be driven around everywhere. And even, like, playing and stuff like that. Like, I remember my mom just being like, go on outside and play. And now I find myself like going out with them to play, or we're playing in the house and that kind of thing. And they spend a lot more time in the house than I did as a kid.
That relationship and all it entails, like keeping kids closer to home, under a watchful eye, and inside the house, is the new normal for lots of parents today. As is, in many cases, the stacked full family schedule Nikki Berrigan describes.
It's common. It just seems to be that everybody that I know that has kids that are into sports are busy. There's no time.
A lot of parents are experiencing such a rush to get their kids through the day, so many activities, that it is easier on the surface. It is easier to simply do things for your kids. It is easier to drive them. It is easier to pack their soccer kit. It is easier to almost basically help them with their homework, or practically right there, do their homework, rather than coaching them through everything that they need to succeed themselves. We have really scheduled our kids.
Michael Unger is a professor of social work at Dalhousie University. Part of Michael's research considers the impact of parenting habits, such as having highly scheduled kids or having Jennifer's experience of worrying about things like traffic or stranger danger.
Parents experience these fears as very genuine. And though there's not necessarily a lot of evidence that supports that all these fears are justified, they do have a genuine anxiety about the welfare of their children. And when they try and have them, you know, not walk to school, or you know, they are doing these things, they're doing them out of a genuine concern, and definitely an appreciation or a sense that there is a real risk out there.
Michael, who's written a book called Too Safe for Their Own Good, says kids need risk to thrive. And he suggests parents think back to their own childhoods and ask themselves some questions.
What were some of the risks and responsibilities that we had at that age? Very importantly, what did we learn from those experiences? And then even if we're cushioning our children from some of those experiences and we're protecting them from some of the experiences that we had as children, that's fine. As long as we still give them the risk taker's advantage and say, okay, you can't walk to school, but what other experience am I going to give you so you learn the same sets of skills that you that we as adults had learned when we were our child's age? What other experience am I going to give my child so they learn the same things about navigating their community, talking to strangers if they have to, figuring out how to keep themselves safe, having some responsibilities for themselves outside and beyond when parents are being are monitoring them? All those skills are still absolutely essential to get into our kids. And that's our job as parents. That we can't abdicate.
In some ways, this whole situation boils down to a simple case of competing values. Shelby and Jason are on a slower parenting track, perhaps. Their two families have made walking the kids and being on the bus a priority. For Nikki and Jennifer, other dynamics take precedence in their quest to make good parenting choices. Walking is one of the chosen sacrifices of Nikki's days. Driving the kids and picking them up is what she does to keep her schedule in order. And Jennifer? She has very real feelings of fear, not the least of which involve coyotes in her neighborhood. She's aware and concerned she's babying her kids, but she doesn't see a way out. But the how to get to school debate is about more than different styles of parenting. There's more to walking to school than 2 feet and a heartbeat, according to researcher and teacher Catherine O'Brien. Walking, Catherine says, is about bigger things in our society, and one issue in particular.
I love talking about sustainable happiness.
Catherine is an associate professor in the education department at Cape Breton University. Sustainable happiness is a concept she coined. It combines ideas about sustainability with happiness studies.
You know, sometimes people think about happiness studies and it seems like it's something very lightweight. They have this sense that, well, happiness is just when somebody is bubbly, or I laugh at a joke, or I feel good today. Those moods are important, but that isn't all there is to happiness. When we're talking about life contentment, life satisfaction, sort of more enduring kinds of emotions, the sense that, you know, we're pleased with our life, that we're happy with the way things are going, that's something different, and it has a different kind of foundation than just those kind of momentary things.
So sustainable happiness isn't that feeling of contentment I get from a new pair of shoes. Sustainable happiness is bigger picture. It's about our interconnectedness with the world around us. It's about feeling at home in our communities. And, surprisingly, it can have a lot to do with how kids get to school.
It's actually children's experiences on the trip to school that launched me to look at the happiness research a number of years ago, because I was seeing quotes from children on International Walk to School Day saying things like, "I walk to school because I get to see a kitty or a puppy and sing along with the birds," or, "I walked with my dad today. I wish he could walk with me every day." So many different things that I was reading that children were saying. To me, it showed a sense of wonder, discovery, connection to the environment, to their community, a sense of joy. And I thought those positive emotions must be important. And that's what drew me to look at the happiness research.
What do you like about walking to school?
Because we don't pollute the air for the animals to not die. It's just fun to walk outside in the nature.
Back on the walking school bus, things are moving at a pretty relaxed pace. Children are joining in dribs and drabs. Annabelle walks with her bike. Beside her, Clara carries a cello almost as big as she is.
Yeah, I don't really like to be driven because all I like to do is talk with my friends. Yeah.
And I think that is really important for us to recognize that when children are able to walk to school or any of their other destinations, this is a wonderful journey for them. And it's an opportunity for them to move through their community, to have physical activity, perhaps playing along the way, even jumping in puddles or kicking leaves or bouncing a ball. They're learning safety. I mean, there's all kinds of things that are very important for them. But those positive emotions, because they're walking, are an example of sustainable happiness.
We go in hurricanes.
You go in hurricanes? What's the worst weather you've ever been in on a walk to school?
Hurricane. Hurricane.
But you seem okay. You didn't blow away.
No. No, I sure didn't. At least I'm alive.
Yes, it really can come from our children to remind us of, you know, that when they're traveling on foot, they're really living along the way. And sometimes our journeys are really so focused on task-oriented that we're just going from point A to point B. And children can remind us that there's a different way to travel.
Shelby Lendrum, for her part, is already there. She's embraced the culture of walking, and not entirely without effort. She and her daughter commute a couple of kilometers by bike before they reach the starting point of the walking school bus.
Yeah, I just think that's ridiculous. Halifax is a small city. There's absolutely no reason to be in a car at all. Unless you live as far as Fairview. It takes us 5 minutes to get from the West End to here and 2 minutes to get from here to the school. And it's a great time for the kids to catch up and chat and get some fresh air because they're about to be trapped in school. So it just seems like a natural thing to do. I think it's just as good for the parents as it is for the children. And for one morning, 15 minutes of your day, once a week, it's not going to kill anyone.
But what about the very real barriers Nikki and Jennifer cite? Catherine says that's where we need a change in culture to help make walking easier for everyone.
When I was a kid, That was just the expectation. You walk to and from school and even home at lunchtime. And if you create environments where that is the culture, there's more eyes on the street, the school is supporting active transportation, I think that's very important as well. When schools become involved and they're promoting it with the classroom, in the classroom, with the students, with the parents, that becomes very important. I visited a school in Ontario a number of years ago. And this is a great example of how a school can promote active travel. Right across the front of the school, there was a banner. It was Morton Way School, and it said, "Morton Way Walks." And you go into the school and into the foyer, and there's another banner, and it says, Morton Way Walks. And then there's posters up that the children have made where they're tracking the walking patterns on Walking Wednesdays for every single grade in the school. And when there's parent-teacher events, there's messages that go home to the parents saying, Morton Way is a walking school. We really encourage you to walk tonight. So it really promotes that culture of walking, and it would be wonderful if we were seeing that happening across the country where schools see themselves as partners in promoting that.
And being on a neighborhood walking school bus, Catherine says, also helps alleviate some of the most reported fears parents have about their kids walking: traffic danger and stranger danger.
They bring us back to that assurance that if you are walking with somebody else, with you walking with another parent, that the child is protected on all those levels.
Seen this way, creating a culture of walking is a broader community project. Because for most parents, the solution isn't for someone to say, just start walking with your kids. The issues are complex. But lucky for us, Catherine says, Maritimers are in a unique position in the country to make this kind of cultural change.
My sense, I'm somewhat new to the East Coast, I've been living here for about 6 years, is that it is a wonderful place to live. It's a wonderful place for families. I know that there are struggles economically, and those are important issues that we do have to address. But we have something here that is something I really feel we need to cherish. And if you look at the happiness research and look at the importance of community, the fact that I can walk down the street in Sydney and make eye contact with people, I'm walking our dog, and people stop and talk to us. There is a sense of community, a sense of neighborliness. We see children out in the street playing ball, hockey. You know, those kinds of things are something that I've heard Mark and Yelski, another Canadian, talk about as genuine wealth. I think we are actually very rich in genuine wealth. And if you think of all of our cultural traditions here, those are really important things for us to cherish. So if we look at, you know, the kind of measures where people are saying this is a happy city and this is a happy country, I don't know that that's enough giving us the full picture of what is going to be contributing to well-being for us, and what would we miss if we started to lose it. I also try to be really aware of those moments for happiness and experiencing what one of my students introduced me to, a concept called natural highs. And that's those moments of just that bring a sense of delight. So, you know, feeling the sun on your face, that first snowfall, the smell of something that you enjoy the smell of, or the taste of something. So trying to be really present and aware of those moments of delight, I think, are important as well.
Heavy.
Can you tell me where we are right now?
We are at school. All of 7 minutes. Nah, that's at a snail's pace. With a cello, a couple bikes, a few strangers. And it works out every time somehow. But for some reason, they can't make it happen. It's sad that the kids don't get to enjoy it, you know? 8 out of 100 kids. So sad. Such a lovely way to start your day. Strolling to school with your friends.
Okay. Thanks, Shelby.
Yeah, no worries, man. I gotta hustle.
Have a good day. See ya.
For Maritime Magazine, I'm Leslie Lowe. Walking.
Thanks, Leslie. And as you may know, if you have school-age kids in your life, October is in fact International Walk to School Month. So let's hear from you now. Did you or do you walk to school? And why or why not? And what impact do you think it has on your happiness? Call us at 1-800-565-5463 or send us an email, marmag@cbc.ca. I'm Pauline Dakin. Next week on the show, a profile of a man who seems to be defying the odds in farming and in business, all before his 25th birthday. That's next Sunday. Until then, for Christina Harnett and me, thank you for listening and enjoy the rest of your long weekend. I want to celebrate, see it shining in your eyes. Because I'm still in love with you, I want to see you dance again. Because I'm still in love with you. On this harvest moon. Because I'm still in love with you, I wanna see you dance again. Because I'm still in love with you. Oh.